Terrible help.
Yes, yes, Don Marcello muttered. Personal loyalty to one's leader was a concept he could understand and agree with, even when the loyalty was to an enemy. As to where he's gone, Gaetano went on, what does it matter? He can't show his face in any of the cities on the moon. He can't get off the moon. All the launching facilities are under tight control. He is probably already dead out on the surface someplace.
And if he's not?
Gaetano shrugged elaborately. What difference? He can't go anywhere that matters. He can't do anything to interfere with us. As far as our plans are concerned, he's as good as dead. Don Marcello was silent for several moments. Gaetano could hear his heavy, labored breathing in the darkness.
And what does the Russian think of this? He asked at last.
Malik? He is concerned. With him, Dan Randolph is a personal affair, a vendetta.
Vendetta, Don Marcello mumbled. What would a Russian barbarian know of a vendetta?
Gaetano wisely chose not to reply.
Well, the old man snapped, is he doing anything?
Who?
The Russian, you cucumber.
Through clenched teeth, Gaetano answered. Malik ordered that all the satellites in orbit around the moon be used to scan the surface for signs of Randolph.
Satellites? Machines? What about a search with people?
Don Marcello, Gaetano said as politely as he could, the moon is not like Earth. They don't send out search parties with dogs. There's no air on the surface, no water. The old man considered this for several moments, mumbling wheezily to himself. Then,
if they do not find his body, it means that he is not dead. If he is not dead, he can still be a threat to us.
I don't see how. He's been stripped of his power. All his wealth has been confiscated. Even if he is alive, he's hiding like a rat someplace almost 500,000 kilometers away from us.
He is dangerous, I tell you.
And so is Carthage, Gaetano thought to himself. But he knew that Don Marcello's kind of stubborn ruthlessness was what had made Rome a great empire, and what made their family enterprise an international power.
What of the Russian? Don Marcello asked. Does he suspect?
Gaetano shook his head. Not a thing. He thinks this plan to confiscate the Big Seven space corporations is all his own idea. Again, silence except for the old man's labored attempts to breathe. Down the hillside, Gaetano could see the distant lights of cars passing on the highway.
The scientists actually believe, Gaetano said in a hushed voice, that the sea levels will rise so high that cities like Reggio will be completely flooded. Messina, Palermo, even Napoli will be underwater.
Bah!
They say it will really happen.
Even if it does, said Don Marcello. It only means more power and money for us. People will want new homes. They'll come running up here to the hills, willing to pay anything for a shack to live in. And in the meantime, we'll be skimming the cream off the Big Seven. Almost legally,
he laughed, a coughing, painful, ugly, gargling sound. Gaetano nodded in the gathering darkness. Don Marcello Arcangelico saw the world in very simple terms. What was good for him was good for his family. The rest of the world, the rest of the universe, he did not care about. What a name for him, Arcangelico. Then Gaetano remembered that Lucifer had been an archangel. 20.
Now we see if you're really who you say you are, Pops Tucker said in his sour, grouchy manner.
It was morning. Not sunrise. That would not happen out on the worn old mountains of the Alphonsus Ringwall for another 330 hours. But inside the shelter where Dan had slept with Big George and Pops Tucker, the digital clock on the comm console said 07:45 hours. The overhead fluorescence had switched on automatically. Morning. Dan sat on the edge of his bunk feeling grungy, unwashed, still stiff and sore from the rattling George had given him. In the darkness before falling asleep, he had tucked his gun under the thin mattress of his bunk.
It was safer there than bulging in his pocket, he reasoned. Tucker eyed him suspiciously. George was in the lavatory. They could hear him gargling ferociously, sputtering like a drowning man.
"If you really are Dan Randolph," the old man said, "and what you told us last night was the truth, you can be a big help to us."
"How?"
"You'll see."
George came out of the lav wearing only his skivvies. He looks like an ad for bodybuilding, Dan thought. More muscles than a squad of weightlifters. Over a breakfast of coffee and thin, flavorless wafers, Tucker outlined his plan.
"If you're really the head of Astro Manufacturing, you ought to be able to access Astro's logistics inventory programs pretty easy."
Dan sipped at the hot, bitter brew in his plastic cup. "What makes you think I'd have anything to do with inventory programs? I hire people to deal with that for me. I don't handle it myself."
"You used to hire people,"
George reminded him. "That's right," Dan admitted. "I used to." Tucker was undeterred.
"Those government assholes took over your office yesterday, right? I'll bet they haven't touched the company's inventory programs. Not yet. They'll be busy with personnel files and organization charts and crap like that. They don't know from the real stuff. They're just paper pushers, not real workers."
With a shake of his head, Dan insisted, "The first thing they did most likely was erase my access codes to all the company programs."
"Your personal access codes, maybe. What about the emergency codes, though?"
"Probably not. But what makes you think I carry them around in my head?"
"You've got them," Tucker said firmly. "If you're really Dan Randolph, you either got them, or you know how to get them."
Dan put his cup down on the table. Tucker had a crafty look on his wizened face. Big George was munching on one of the wafers, but he too had his eyes on Dan. "Heads you win, tails I lose," Dan thought as he stared back at Tucker. "If I can't access the inventory programs, you throw me out the airlock. If I can, you get what you want, and maybe then you toss me out. I'll have to get that damned gun when they've both got their backs turned."
"Well?"
Tucker prompted. Dan gave him a crooked grin. "Let's see what's in my wristwatch." He slipped it off his wrist. It was easier to work the tiny keyboard that way. Dan knew that the emergency access codes to the logistics programs were not stored in the wrist unit's minuscule computer. But the gadget did hold the phone numbers of every department head at Alphonsus and Caracas. This early in the morning, hardly any of them would be at their offices, but their phones would be linked to the company's central mainframe. It was almost ridiculously easy. While Tucker and George watched, Dan used the name of the head of the logistics department to get the mainframe to produce a string of access codes. "You were right," he muttered, as he watched the numbers scrolling past on the wrist unit's tiny screen. "Don't even need the damned emergency codes. The idiot program's about as secure as a virgin in the men's locker room." Dan frowned, thinking that he would have to beef up the system when... Then he remembered that it was no longer his system, or his company. Tucker borrowed his wristwatch and went to the desktop computer, began tapping in the access codes. George smiled happily.
"Now we'll be able to find out what your blokes are moving from one location to another."
"What good will that do you?"
"Can't steal what you can't find," George said.
"Steal?"
"Right. How do you think we live out here? Charity from the Big Seven?"
Tucker looked up from the screen, its bluish glow casting a ghastly light on his wrinkled face.
"There's a shipment of spare parts for the skimmers going out to the base camp on the outslope."
"Crew?" George asked.
"None indicated. Just a cargo run."
"Sounds good. When?"
Tucker glanced back at the screen.
"'S afternoon. Leaves the city at 1600.
George rolled his eyes ceilingward as he did a swift mental calculation.
"Ought to be here by 1620, 1625 at the latest."
"You're going to hijack a cargo trolley?" Dan asked. Tucker made a disdainful grunt.
"Nothing so grand, Randolph. We're not big thieves. We're just small ones. All we're going to do is pilfer a little."
Jane Scanwell had spent the night in the transfer station at the L1 Liberation Point,